cybersecurity expert Charles Tendell.
Systemic failures that brought their whole systems down.
Charles Tendell, he's a certified ethical hacker.
Your emails, it turns out, are not nearly as private as you think.
Show really how vulnerable we are.
Charles Tendell, who deals with hackers all the time, says,
if you have to ask yourself, is this right? It probably isn't.
Welcome.
Guys, welcome back one more time into the Charles Tendell Show. You know who I am and you know what I'm about. If not, go over to thecharlestendellshow.com, like, subscribe, share, and do all that other fantastic stuff. Those of you joining the show at New Bern's News Talk during your drive at 5, welcome to the family as usual. And those of you who listen to this online at your leisure on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, you name it, it's all out there. All of your information and comments are welcome on the show as always. The topic of today's show is about email, you know, with the presidential election having come to a conclusion and being swayed in certain interesting ways. It brought up a lot about email. I mean, even on this show, even on other shows, I've gone out, I've spoken to other people, and we've covered it a lot when it comes down to, email. You know, Hillary Clinton and her private email server and the investigations into that, how computer forensics work when it deals with emails, and the bits and pieces and parts of what email is. What a lot of people don't understand is there's so much extra data, and email is actually one of the oldest forms of communication on the internet that exist. And it's been a fly in the ointment or a thorn in the side of a lot of people, especially in the enterprise world or even in the consumer world, of once you send that email, you have no real idea as to where it's going and how far and how wide it's going to spread. And it as we've seen these things evolve over the last several years, and the ready availability of supercomputers in our pockets, like, you know, known as smartphones, we've gotten to the point where we've gotten very casual in our use of email. We send everything from, you know, official business documents to resumes to secret recipes for, you know, our favorite meatloaf to, you know, you name it, it's probably in an email. And, you know, those intimate emails that go between people are all out there in the world. Now, the funniest thing about email is it's never just in one place, right? It's the sender, the receiver, the servers in between, the hops that it takes, anyone who might be monitoring or being malicious. And because of that, we've seen the invention and the really wide adoption of a lot of, how you say, third-party apps that do just that. Their whole point is to, we can ensure privacy. So you've got things like Snapchat and all these other ones where the data supposedly disappears. Even Facebook recently went to kind of a secret instant messaging system. And like, you know, I will get to in here in a minute, the whole idea behind it is to just give people an extra level of privacy when dealing with email, right? And or dealing with communications, because clearly email isn't it. You know, we've seen so many scandals over the years. We've seen so many different people get hit over the head with this. We've seen so many people misunderstand the general use of email that different solutions are coming out. But as these systems go, as these things like Snapchat go and Slack and all this other stuff goes, you still have the question of how do you work with it in an official capacity and what you should be doing with it. So I had a really good conversation with Galina, the CEO of VaporStream, about their new messaging opportunity, their new messaging app, and what they're doing to not only address the issue of email as a whole, but how we can fix messaging for not just enterprises, but for consumers and everyone else. So check it out here on the Charles Tendell Show, my interview or my great conversation with Galina, for the CEO of VaporStream. Here you go. So Galina, give a little bit of background about who you are and what you do.
Ah, thank you very much, Charles. So I am Galina Dabrowski, and I'm currently the CEO of VaporStream, which of course we'll talk about VaporStream a little bit down the line in the show. Now, I have been in the governance and compliance as well as in the security space, which are all very related spaces, for the past 20-odd years. Like you, Charles, I've been a serial entrepreneur. This is not my first startup.
Fun.
I've worked in startups before, and I've also sold a number of them to various companies. So I've worked in the big industry at CA, at Hewlett-Packard, at Autonomy, so various large publicly traded companies. So I've had exposure to both sides of the technology model and the business model. That brings me here. My expertise very much is in the governance, compliance, security space. And I've been a member as well as the chair and the president of one of the biggest information governance associations. So I've done a lot of the activities like that and trying to bring the profession up as well as building businesses.
Sounds like fun. And the serial entrepreneurship is, it's kind of addictive once you get into it, isn't it?
It sure is.
Going from one thing, you're like, I started this project, it's doing well, somebody else is interested in it, you can have it, and let's go do some other things. So that's part of the reason, I mean, for example, my show was I guess, not the final, but it's the most recent of my serial entrepreneurships. I've owned companies and sold them. I've, you know, done different things. I've worked in a lot of different places like you have. But we are where we are right now, and it's so exciting to see the evolution of tech and security. And I actually just finished a show about that, where we were how you know, we've seen it advance and how the years to come are turning out to be just as spectacular as the years that have preceded it, but we've got so many more complexities. And you're actually on the show today because we're talking about the evolution of kind of email and where data communication is going.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most exciting topics. If you think about email, we've had email since, well, in reality, since the 70s probably. Mm-hmm. We've actually had the internet, would you believe, since the 70s and 80s. It just wasn't quite as widely used. Right. So when I did my doctoral work at Columbia, which was in the 80s, we all communicated via the internet, which is called DARPANET at that point. Mm-hmm. And when Al Gore reinvented it, they said, oh, really? I thought we had it for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
You know? but my point of all that is that email's been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And email has been a very entrenched form of communication. But yeah, we've seen all the problems and hacks. And I think particularly this election season really highlighted the vulnerability of email. And there was a wonderful article in the New York Times probably 2 weeks ago that said, you know, whoever wins or loses this election, the biggest loser will be email.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. You're right about that. The advancement of email. It used to be. You know, that there was some level of privacy assumed with email, and then in order to achieve the actual level of privacy that people expect to get nowadays, you have to encrypt, or you have to use third party services, or you have to use all these different things with it to go out there. But you're right. After this election cycle, you know, people are looking at their email, being like, you know, I don't know how comfortable I feel with communicating on a medium where it's inevitably controlled by someone else.
Oh, well, and I don't know if it's only about the control. So allow me, if you would, to kind of extend the analogy a little bit. So
Go
we went
it.
From this. Yeah, great, thanks. So we went from, let me actually take us back into the Stone Age of physical email. Okay, so in the Stone Age of physical email, fraud also happened. Somebody could steal your letters, somebody could open them up, somebody could remove a check. So there was always that third-party potential intrusion, right? But because of the fact that the physical was encrypted point to point, it was directed from me to you, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. It would really be a one-shot deal at interception, if you will, right,
mm-hmm.
of that email. And generally, the delivery would be person to person, although somebody, you could claim that a family member could still open up, or somebody in your household, and read something confidential, even if it was marked confidential.
Right.
But you know, people have courier services, and then FedEx came around, and other ways of sending things with more assurance of delivery to the right person. Then fast forward to email. Now we have email addresses, and things are going. So obviously, we've now made a couple of interesting openings. Well, first of all, we could have third-party eavesdroppers, right, who could pick up those emails and open them, and it's a whole lot easier than trying to steal something out of the mailbox, right? Because
right.
you physically don't have to be present. So that's kind of number one. Number two, in order to have email transmission, it is necessary to send this email, just like we do through the post office, and entrust it to some other layers. But the difference is when you entrust it to the post office, you are actually, the physical item doesn't leave any traces at the post office. Nobody can open it and look at it or store it. They don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about an email, obviously, if I sent it to XYZ server first, it's probably over there, and then it hops to something else, and so forth and so on. And then ultimately, it lands on a device. Like your computer in its storage. Now, typically, if you are using, let's say, Gmail, it's also in storage with Google because, of course, you want it to travel with you anywhere you go and be accessible from any device.
Mm-hmm.
So now for speed and efficiency, it's duplicated itself onto this device, but maybe that device. So maybe that new device happens to be at the airport. And now your email is left traces at the device on the air at the airport because it's duplicated itself onto that.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of, I think, saw that with Anthony Weiner's laptop. You know, the email sort of has a situation of duplicating itself, even if you did not intend it to do so. So unless you specifically are very conscious of making sure that it doesn't propagate, its natural design is to propagate for convenience, right? So that's kind of where we've been with email, and we've all been all about convenience and less about security. Now, to your point, encryption, and we'll talk to sort of the next thing. So we started to see encryption, but encryption also implies I have to offer decryption. And nobody's really completely cracked how you send something point to point, especially to a variety of people, where they could encrypt and decrypt without having to do a whole lot of legwork, right? Particularly, again, on email, because do we have the same encryption services and the same system? And that's also, it's beyond the scope of this podcast, but there are different things that big companies like Microsoft, for instance, are currently doing and acquiring companies in this space which allow encryption of attachments and things like that, right? Where you don't need to exchange keys, for example.
Right.
So, but still at all, because of the fact that email is just so sticky around various devices, it opens up a lot of opportunity for hacking it, not necessarily at even the server or the cloud, but really the more vulnerable points are the single points of failure, the individual laptops, the individual computers. Again, as we saw with Anthony Weiner's laptop, right? It's so much easier to hack when things are all over the place. And it's very easy for you as the sender to lose control of the content. You could no longer be assured, like you were with physical mail, that when you sent me something and I said, yes, I have it, that is the sole copy. Now, of course, I could copy it with a copy machine and I could duplicate it and send it around, but it requires a little bit of effort for me to do so, as opposed to clicking resend and send it to somebody else. Right? It's a much easier process.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, having copiers and faxes did put content control in jeopardy, but having email puts it even in a greater jeopardy because there's multiple things that we talk about with secure communication. There's the people, the bad guys or the hackers who might pick up your communications and grab them and do something with them. But then there is the people you sent it to who inadvertently or intentionally might share the content in unintended ways, right? Like let's say I wanted to send it to John, so I wanted to send it to John Smith, and accidentally I sent it to John Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Happens all the time, right?
Well, it does.
I just click it. Yep. Now the content is out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the aspects that I try to explain to everybody. Not just people that listen to the show, but people that I present to or that I speak to in the world is once you hit send, there are a couple of hundred different things that take place in that very moment. And then there are a couple of thousand places where your email might end up. And the reasonable expectation of privacy or confidentiality or the integrity of that email starts to be chipped away at as it goes. So like I can send you an email and there's one level that it gets chipped away at. And in between there, there's various different hops, various different pieces of information, and it just continues to be chipped away at. But the question becomes, what does this mean in terms for email? You know, what does it mean for in terms for secure communications? I've seen businesses that are using this for official communication. Like an email is almost as binding as a legal contract because it's in writing at that point. I've seen people on the consumer side where they send an email and, like you said, they meant to send it to John Smith, but it went to John Brown and it was an intimate email, and now they're trying to figure out how to get that back. And we've seen
it's never going to get back.
Ever.
Once it's gone, it's like Pandora's box. Uh-huh. Once you open it, you could never gather all the feathers.
Yep. You're never going to get it back. But then the question becomes, I mean, we've seen people institute controls over that. We've seen even Google put out kind of an undo button. And like you said, it's being stored on all kinds of devices, and you've got all these different places where you're going to access it. So there's so many traces, so many bits and pieces out there. But what about the people who have been putting in controls, have been trying to do this? Are they in any way successful?
So that's a great question. They are somewhat successful. So there's two points. You could be somewhat successful with controls in that you might do data. Even 10 years ago, there was something called data leak prevention that would look at email, and this is particularly prevalent in the banking industry because of all the regulatory requirements, right?
Mm-hmm.
The email traffic or communication traffic would be looked at based on the rules of who could receive what, et cetera, and maybe stop some traffic or have a review of some traffic or flag some traffic, let it go, but flag it as for potential review post fact. So those kinds of things can happen. And encryption is helpful. An undo is helpful. But it still doesn't solve the fundamental issue of, if I am the intended recipient and I get your content, I have control of your content.
Mm-hmm.
And I can share it with anybody I want, and people tend to do it freely. Or I could share my device with somebody on purpose or inadvertently. Again, Q Anthony Weiner. And there you go. Unintended proliferation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to prevent that. And furthermore, the sort of storage of this item all over the place, nobody's gotten a handle on that. How do you minimize that storage, and nobody really disposes of anything. So because of that, you have all these potentially vulnerable collections. So even if you do a great job, so for example, most financial institutions do a very good job of securing themselves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you really have to go after information of those institutions, you would most likely, if you were a hacker, try to go after the softer targets of third parties they do business with, perhaps a law firm they do business with, or perhaps somebody else they do business with, which might be more vulnerable and less secure.
Mm-hmm.
So even so, the solution to that has been eluding email. Furthermore, you know, people still, for whatever reason, the human nature and human behavior is such that they still don't treat email, even though you were correct in what you said with 100% certainty. You said email is an official record. Absolutely. It's a binding contract. Absolutely. Every court in the land will tell you that, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, people don't treat it that way. People will still put the darndest things in email, which they wouldn't have done if they were writing a formal, back to my analogy of the Stone Age letters, right?
Right, right.
People would think about what text they would put in and what's appropriate. If you look at the DNC emails that were had by WikiLeaks,
right,
obviously that didn't cross the author's mind. But if you don't want it on the 5 o'clock news, don't write it in an email.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's because, like you said, it is one of those things where people now see email. They've naturally got this idea in their head that email is private. And I've actually been talking about this for years. People believe, I mean, we can go all the way back to the General Petraeus scandal of some years ago, that he had all these emails he was sharing with, I think then his mistress, or he was sending communications.
That's right.
And, and everybody treats it this way. They think in the back of their head, this is private. This is a conversation between me and you, and it doesn't go anywhere else. But you, aside from all the technical stuff, in between the source and the destination, you get again to the destination, and you don't know who has positive control of the destination. We're in a world now where I could have hacked your computer, I could have hacked your phone, you could have been inadvertently connected to a network that where people are able to man in the middle and monitor this kind of stuff. And it just seems like we've got all these band-aids and patches and different solutions, different things out there, but people are still thinking I can be private in my email. I mean, I honestly don't think like Anthony Weiner would have 10 years ago considered the possibility that he would in turn have some sway in a presidential election because of the emails on his computer.
Well, absolutely not. And that's the point. So I believe the age of email has to come to an end as the medium for that kind of communication. Now, mind you, email may or may not, and you know, I'm not going to prognosticate that it will disappear, but it may and certainly should become more of a vehicle for a more formalized communication, kind of like Stone Age physical mail has become. So if I want to do an official communication with a contract and create a record, that might be a perfectly legitimate way to do the sharing. Although, even for that, for sharing files and so forth, there are methods like shared file services, which could be much more secure, like, for instance, Box, right, for the corporate environment, mm-hmm. which could be much more secure. You could give rights to who you want to give rights. Not to say it's not, I mean, anybody can be hacked if they needed to be, but when you're counting on somebody like that who's professional to protect one repository of records, it's a whole lot easier to protect that than to protect all the different endpoints, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's no inadvertent forwarding. So even if I forward a link to a document to you and you have no rights to that link, when you click on that link, it's not going to help you. So at least I protect my content.
Okay, so with the idea that email should be used for more of a formal communication, and we should be taking some more of the cheerful banter that we use email for right now, because everybody's using it for so many different purposes. The idea of putting email in a category of this is for business use and you don't want to send an email until you've got you know, something official, you've got a document, or you've got something that you clearly want to make sure is said, what's the solution? I mean, we've seen enterprises
right.
change to so many different things. We've got Slack, and we've got, you know, what's Microsoft's internal messenger, Link, I think is what it still is, and we've got
That's right.
you know
uh-huh.
so many different smaller methods of communication. What's one that checks off all the blocks for privacy, you know, integrity, availability, you know, all of those things that we expect in security?
So you're absolutely correct. There are lots and lots of communications. I could tell you what we believe, for example, at VaporStream, and this is how we view it, that actually there is a trend anyway already, especially among the millennials and so forth, to really use text and chat more than email for those casual communications. That seems to be the more prevalent way of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with text and chat, there is an interesting point of security. Typically, you'll see most text and chat is encrypted end-to-end, right? End-to-end encryption or point-to-point encryption is something that's offered by quite a number of vendors.
Right.
Now, what that helps with is, of course, that man-in-the-middle attack. So nobody in the middle could actually listen to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
What it doesn't help with, of course, is content propagation. So if you texted me something and I thought it was so inappropriate that I wanted to share it with a news organization, I could still do that, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
So it's still not as confidential as you might like to be.
Well, that's why services like Snapchat came around, and I don't even pretend to know, you know, what people are talking about on that. But ideas behind that was it shows up on the end device and then disappears after a certain amount of time, and people and users around the tech savvy users very quickly found a way around that. Screenshots, you know, they're like, oh, well, got the message. Now,
very interesting that you say that. You're absolutely right there. So there were a couple of problems. Number one, Snapchat didn't really disappear because they still stored things in their servers. And if you remember, Snapchat was actually hacked, mm-hmm. and pictures were taken from them. Even though they disappeared off the devices, they were kept in their cloud.
Right.
So when you do that, you still have the data. It's hard to claim ephemerality if you're not actually disappearing from everywhere, right?
Right.
So that's kind of problem number one. Problem number two, I'll get to the screenshot in a second, which is kind of a contradictory problem. When you're in the enterprise environment, disappearing off the devices is all fine and good. In fact, it's very beneficial because it prevents the propagation. But the enterprise kind of has to be able to listen in for the purposes of compliance and governance, right?
Right.
So imagine this, you know, a hospital, a physician and a nurse want to chat about the patient because, you know, it's urgent, and they send each other chats. And it's very highly private, confidential health information that they're sending for legitimate reasons, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, it happened to one of my employees. He had burns. He had blown up his barbecue grill and ended up coming into the emergency room with burns on his arms. There was no burn specialist in the emergency room, so the doctor on call took pictures of him and texted them in the open.
Wow.
To a consulting physician. And he said, well, you know, you can't do that. It's a HIPAA violation. And the guy said, yeah, I know, but I need to treat you. I'm like, what do you want me to do?
I mean, that was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, you know, there's a HIPAA lawyer somewhere that's about to lose it over the fact that this doctor is sending it that way. But it's not the first time I've heard something like that.
Well, this actually happened to one of my employees. In a big major urban hospital, not in some, you know, backwater place, if you think about that.
Right.
It was just crazy, right? So what we really want to be able to do is send information securely. You want to send information such that the recipient can't forward it, share it, do anything with it other than what you intended them to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is read it, respond to it. And then you want the information to disappear off the devices at your schedule. So, for example, in the medical community, that might be, you know, 5 days, you know, 5 business days, who knows, right? Whatever you need. But then the device should lose it anyway because it's not even useful on the device after that. You never go back to the old conversations. They're casual in nature. Mm-hmm. But the enterprise needs to have an ability to create that single record. So going with my hospital analogy, the hospital needs to put that information to the patient's healthcare record, right? So the next person treating that patient sees the communication and the treatment that transpired, even though it transpired over this casual chat, mm-hmm. right? So those are characteristics of a true, secure, ephemeral enterprise solution. So we, for instance, are one of the companies that offers it, we mean VaporStream. And that's a very good way of communicating quickly, efficiently, and ephemerally with controls. Now, I want to get back to your point of screenshots. You're absolutely right. Screenshots are a little bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. So, again, for this, if you're advertising ephemerality, you want to either, A, the Android operating system actually does not allow you to completely prevent the screenshot, but it does allow you to kick somebody out, or is it the iOS? One of those two. I always get them confused. Mm-hmm. One of the major operating systems allows you to prevent screenshots completely. Actually, I think it's Android. It allows you to prevent screenshots completely, and iOS does not, but iOS gives you controls that you could detect the screenshot. So, for example, the way we handle that is if we prevent them on the Android, but if we detect them on the iOS, we shred the conversation immediately. So they have one shot, one chance at taking a picture of one screen. and then the conversation is gone.
Okay. I mean, I see that as a great solution, but then I guess this is one of those things that you're actually never going to be able to get around is, what if I'm taking pictures with another device on this one? You know, so at that point, it's an intent.
That is an intent, number one. Number two, we do at least mitigate it a little bit. How do we do that? Yeah. The mitigation that we do is, of course, at that point, like you said, that's intent. And the intent is, you might want to steal the information, but you also might want to make it evidentiary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Evidentiary information always has to have the provenance, meaning the header, the address, and for the courts to accept it. You need to have the header and the information together, right? Otherwise, you could have cut and pasted it, and there's no way for you to show provenance.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually, and this is our patent, force the separation of the header of the message and the text. So you would need to have you would need to swipe on your screen to see who is in the conversation, and to swipe your screen again, right? So you could swipe back and forth, you know, like you do on a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
In order to see the two parts of the chat, they never appear together on one screen for that exact reason.
Okay, I mean that's a pretty stable mitigation right there. I mean, by separating the two, you make it more work for the end user. And like let's face it, what if somebody's looking for this for an intent? They're trying to do it as easily as possible, and if they're really dedicated to it, they can always go around it. So there's no way to prevent everything.
There's no way to prevent everything, but right. If you could prevent the let's say 99% of proliferation, inadvertent disclosure, malicious forwarding, you're way ahead of the game. Because again, if we come back to the election and all the things that were leaked, in no way was there intent on anybody's part to leak them,
mm-hmm.
and to try to record them, right? They were hacked after the fact. They stayed in places where they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things were very, very preventable from the beginning.
So the suggestion then is that again, we need to be separating email, but with the fact that email played such a crucial role in the 2016 election cycle, what do you think that means for email? Like, are we going to start to see it die off? Are we seeing, is there some statistical analysis that shows it's already happening?
You know what? There is absolutely a statistical analysis that's showing a decreased usage. For example, statistically, email has an open rate, okay, today, lower than 40% lower open rate.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lower than 6% response rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, text messaging, by contrast, has a 98% open rate and a 45% response rate.
Marketers have been looking at that for a long, long, long time, where they've been saying, you know, if we can figure out ways to get these messages onto people's devices, it's more likely they're going to open it, as opposed to the mass email blast, because those filters are, people aren't opening them. And I have to be honest, if I get an email that isn't from somebody that I know, or it isn't from somewhere that I expect or something like that, I'm pretty unlikely that I'm going to open that email.
Exactly. Either for security purposes, or because people tend to write lengthy things. You don't know what the point is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in fact, they seem to be much more concise and to the point. And you might glance at it and say, yes, interested or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
In general, it's a much quicker communication. So if you think about it, forget marketers and advertisers, even communication between employees. If I want something done quickly, I will text, or rate a stream text, because we use it internally, mm-hmm. one of my team for an instant response.
And see, I've seen that. I see that a lot. And I guess it's kind of an underlying etiquette when it comes to communication. If what I'm asking or what I'm communicating to you does not require an immediate response, and I want you to be able to read it at your leisure and go do that, I will send you an email. But if I want to know something right now, I am going to switch to the medium that's more instant. It's a text message or an actual instant message there. So that's kind of growing as an industry, but to say that, that and I see it in society as a whole. You see enterprises moving that way. The fact that Slack is becoming a kind of a standard amongst groups of people that want to have group conversations and all of that. It's just we're leaning that direction. But what's the next step? Are we just going to see more and more people creating, yet another messaging app? At what point do all of these converge? What sets things apart to be the new standard in this type of communication?
Well, see, that's a great question because like every other new technology, what do we see generally with new technologies? We see a lot of small players pop up and have a bunch of apps, right, mm-hmm. that all offer features and stuff. The market then shakes out the important features bubble up to the top. People start, the bigger companies acquire the smaller companies, which is generally the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bigger companies build it into their communication platforms. The communication platforms evolve and move forward, and then something else comes up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we are in that stage with secure communication and messaging where the landscape has a number of smaller players. And we are all thinking and offering features and compliance and governance and so forth. And at some point, probably within the next 3 to 5 years, maybe sooner, but let's say, you'll see some consolidation, some acquisition, and an adoption into the more mainstream communications platform place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're going to see, like you do with everything. You know, my first company was an information governance record management company. And I remember when we first formed it, there were, I don't know, half a dozen small players. Everybody was small, you know, like under $1 million in revenue starting out. Everybody had different approaches, blah, blah, blah. Then eventually DoD actually came out with a standard, to the 5015.2 standard for records management. Everybody started writing to that standard. So at least there was like a baseline. So that eliminated some people who didn't need the baseline. Amazingly enough, industry adopted DoD 5015. Everybody started to write to that. Then the big content players said, wait a second, we need this. You know, everybody's asking for this. And they started buying the smaller players and then became part of the bigger ECM platform.
Wow.
So,
okay.
That's kind of how things tend to evolve, right?
Right. And like you said, like we were saying, and we keep kind of joking about it over the course of this conversation, is with what's happened over the election cycle, what happened there, we might actually see somebody push for a standard with communication that says it's got to be more secure, it's got to be controllable, monitored, it's got to be deletable, it's got to be some sort of verification that it is just between me and you if it's going to be valid, and we reserve email for more of a you know, official capacity there. But we're about out of time, and I want to get to talking about VaporStream. Now, how does your messaging solution differ from all the other ones?
So we at VaporStream very much believe in the right to security and privacy, but on the enterprise level. So everybody also offers encryption. That doesn't differentiate anybody from anybody else. That's a given. You know, it's a sort of the cost of entry.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do offer is ephemerality, so it truly disappears off of all the devices. And we don't store the messages. So we cannot be hacked for the messages at VaporStream. You know, they really are gone. And again, we could talk about how at another point, but it's sort of a specific way that we do things. We don't store them. Now, having said that, we also have that header body separation, screenshot detection, all of those protections. We offer ephemerality, which means it disappears off the devices on an organizational schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have groups that have it for 1 minute and groups that have it for 30 days. But then it will disappear and age out. But what also makes us particularly very different is that we also offer governance and compliance. So if the organization has to be monitoring things, you know, like when you get that phone call that says, this phone call is monitored for quality assurance,
mm-hmm.
well, because there's a requirement to do that, we can create that single copy of record at the sender's request. I mean, the sender creates it behind their firewall in their repository of records. And then they have their normal processes for looking that information up, for giving it to a regulator, for disposing of it on their normal schedule, all of those different, or potentially presenting it as evidence in court because they were required to keep those records. So they have full control over that without having to recall all those little devices, which is actually impossible.
Wow. Okay. Okay, so I mean, the compliance aspect of essentially an instant messaging tool is amazing. Does it what devices does it work on? Is there a desktop app? Is it just mobile to mobile? How does it operate?
Excellent question. So obviously we are aimed at mobile to mobile. So iOS and Android are our primary targets. However, because we are enterprise, we actually do offer a desktop version, and the desktop can communicate and text either to other desktop versions or, of course, to the mobile devices. So, but because the world is becoming more mobile, and we understand that, that's really our aim is to be with that, with the trend of mobile apps, text and chat over email, which is where we believe the world is going. And, of course, I didn't mention this, but your live links to documents, so I could actually send you a disappearing message, which will be gone from your device, but I might want you to read a document which I left for you in the cloud, let's say in Box or in Dropbox or on my OneDrive at Microsoft. You could click on that link. You could go look at content that I intended for you to look at, but the link and all of that will disappear over time, so you don't have forever access from your device.
Wow.
Just in case somebody actually gets your device, you know?
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, it makes everything kind of perishable in the technology world, which is fantastic. I mean, the only real way we're going to ensure that data doesn't end up all over the place and people end up manipulating it later is to kind of limit the amount of access they have to it, which has been kind of a staple in the security world for forever. You know, the role-based permissions or the limited access or least privilege. So that's actually pretty cool. Well, we're about out of time, and I'd like to give my guests the opportunity to promote what matters to them. So how can people get more information about VaporStream and see what you guys are up to and what you're going to be up to in the future?
Absolutely. So we have a very, very good, wonderful website, and we actually have some very interesting blogs on that website. In fact, my latest blog had to do with this particular New York Times article on the end of age of email, but we do all kinds of blogs, and it's at VaporStream.com. So that's a good way to explore us. You could also reach out to me, and my email address is very simple. It's galina@vaporstream.com. So we do quite a bit of writing and talking about all the different topics that matter, not just the end of age of email, but what's a good policy for mobile devices in the enterprise, for example, best practices. How do you tie those in? What about bring your own device to work? What are best practices? Check out our blogs. We provide all of that information. Mm-hmm. I also have a book out on information retention called Chucking Daisies, which talks about defensible disposition of information in the enterprise, even when the information is stored in those central repositories. So all of that is available as well.
Right. Well, Galina, it has been a pleasure talking to you, and it's given a lot of people a lot of stuff to think about. I actually, one last question on this subject. Is this just for enterprises, or can consumers get kind of capitalize on this as well?
Oh, yeah, there's a consumer app as well, and the consumer app is free. The only difference is, of course, there's no way to record the consumer app. It does just disappear. And in the consumer app, in fact, you don't have any way to change the retention. It's 24 hours after last communication.
Wow. All right. Well, Galina, it has been, like I said, a pleasure talking to you, and I can't wait to hear more. And I'm definitely going to keep an eye out on VaporStream and check out the blog and make sure we got links out there to it and see what you guys are doing in the future.
Excellent. I appreciate your time.
All right. Well, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was an interesting series of events, and we went through the history of email and the age of it, and in the world of technology, in the world of data moving around, and you know, people looking for faster ways to communicate, the ethics of email kind of came out. And I don't know about you guys, but most of the time I spend a lot of time trying to figure out which medium to work with. If I'm having an active conversation, it's usually something like an instant message. If I'm having a conversation where I want some detail or I want something expanded upon, it's usually email that I send conversations about. But it gives people the opportunity to operate at their leisure. But the statistics behind it, and even marketers know this, that the data is more likely to be read if it's in your pocket, if it's in an instant message, because there's this implied urgency with that level of messaging. Now, in the case of VaporStream, we're looking at yet another messaging app, and that's okay, I guess. I mean, having more messaging and having more things available to us, and eventually we might end up standardizing some of this data. We might end up putting it in a position where we have to have some of these different things. And that's a possibility. That's a very good possibility that it might happen that way, but we're probably a long way off. And with the next president of the United States having cybersecurity as kind of a staple in his policies, you probably are going to see a lot of this happen, a lot of new policies, a lot of new things come out. And if you missed yesterday's show, it's really about, hopefully we get to a point where the right people are making the right policies. And it's not just based on enterprise need, but you have enough people with enough tech background and enough security background to want to be able to contribute to a project and make it better, right? To make it exist well, to make it move in a direction that's functional. But in the interest of say email, right? Like we were talking about, it's not just me to you. It's me to my, my server that's going to push it out to another server that's going to carry it along another wire that's going to connect to another server and get moved even further down the line to eventually make it to the end person. But there's no real mechanisms for control there. And that does raise the good question. What are you using email for? And are you using it for the right things? Are you using it for the right privacy? Are you using it for the right design? Are you what level of expectation are you having out there? And I've even spoken to this. I've got some of the videos that are over on the YouTube page that you can get to from the charlesstendellshow.com are where I was talking to people about the General Petraeus emails, if you think back to when that was, and how that all came out was somebody intercepted or somebody collected or somebody was monitoring this data. And if you just come forward a little bit to the 2016 election season, emails played a huge role in the type of communication. And it just goes to show that these things aren't nearly as private as you think they are. They can't be. They're not going to have this level of data privacy or data protection out there. But still, people use it as if they have this guaranteed level of privacy. And, there's still that age-old saying where, if you get an email from someone that you don't recognize and it's got an attachment, just kind of delete it and don't use it. But it still begs the question of, even if you're doing everything right for your email, how do you know that the person on the other end isn't or is doing everything that's right out there? And there's a lot, don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of yet another messaging app that's out there to go on the list of every other messaging app that's out there. But hopefully we'll start to see a convergence of all of these technologies and putting, a kind of our money where our mouth is and developing something that's going to make it better. But that's it. I'm out of time on the Charles Stendell Show. So that's where I'm going to end it. And I guess I will see you tomorrow.